Hello, everyone, and welcome to Culturally Relevant, a podcast about film, television, art, and culture. I'm David Chen, and today is a bonus episode. It's been a few weeks since the last episode, but there's a lot going on in the world right now. There's a lot going on in the world of entertainment right now. Specifically, as I am recording this, the Sundance Film Festival is running, but it's a little bit different than in years past. It's a bit of a hybrid model, mostly doing screenings online as well as satellite sites. And so I thought, let's put together an episode talking about Sundance this year, talking about the films we've seen, because Sundance is often a festival where you can see the movies that people are going to be talking about for the rest of the year. So are there any movies this year that we'll be talking about? Let's get into it. Joining me for this conversation, I'm so pleased to be able to have this conversation with a film critic whose work has appeared at AV Club and Fox Digital, Caroline Sita. Thanks for joining me today on Culturally Relevant.
Oh, thanks for having me. I'm really looking forward to this.
So I thought that before we get into the movies, right? So what we're going to do today is we're going to talk about three movies in depth that we think are worth mentioning, plus a bunch of other ones that we've seen that are still worth mentioning, but maybe not as in depth. But before we get to that, I thought we could just talk a little bit about our experience of Sundance overall, our sense of the overall festival. Is this your first time attending, or have you been to Sundances in the past? What's been your experience?
This is my first Sundance. It's also basically the first like major film festival I've ever covered. So I really have nothing to compare this experience to. So I think that's given me a real, like, real happy to be here vibe. You know what I mean? Like, from my point of view, this is really cool. I have cool access. I'm not... you know, I don't feel like I'm missing out on these things I've done before. I'm also in Chicago, where it has been about 0 degrees for the past couple days with snow on the ground. So I sort of feel like I'm getting the Sundance experience in that regard, with the convenience of not having to leave my couch.
Yeah, yeah. I went to Sundance 2 years in a row, approximately 10 to 12 years ago. And I would say it was like a formative experience, you know, like it was an incredible experience to go to Sundance because, you know, you're in the mountains, it's snowy, it's cold, the food is terrible, but you're surrounded by famous people and you are watching movies that are frequently going to be talked about for the rest of the year, that are going to win awards, that are going to make people's top 10 lists. But the best part of Sundance, I think, is the lack of any expectation whatsoever. And what I mean by that is you're sitting down in the theater, or in our case this year, you're firing up your browser or your Apple TV or whatever it is, your Fire Stick, and you have no idea how good that movie's going to be. You know, there's no Rotten Tomatoes scores. There's like 12 reviews on Letterboxd, and you are going to be one of the first people in the world to experience this movie. And that's really special, you know? Like, it's... I end up watching movies that I would never otherwise watch at Sundance or online for Sundance. And that's both a good and bad thing because it's good because it's like, oh, wow, I'm expanding my horizons, or seeing movies that are like, wow, this is surprisingly good. And people are going to be talking about this for the rest of the year. And it's bad because some of the movies are kind of bad, you know, or not enjoyable. And it's like, I'm watching this movie that might be even of a genre that I don't generally like, but I'm watching it because it's at Sundance. And so... So it can be a mixed bag, but overall, I think it's quite special. Now, I do not have press access this year, and I assume you are covering it as press, yeah?
Yeah, I've been doing sort of every other day capsule write-ups for Fox Digital, so sort of watching stuff for that coverage, and then also just things that interest me, checking them out.
Yeah. So I will say that as a viewer, it's been overall a pretty great experience. Like, the movies have been overall pretty good. The quality of the video has been pretty good. And like the purchase process has been pretty seamless. Like, I can, look up the screening on my phone, buy tickets, and then literally seconds later, it's available on my Fire Stick to stream. Right. And so that's been a pretty seamless, smooth experience. And as you're listening to this, I think this weekend they're probably going to rerun a bunch of the award-winning films. So you have a chance to watch many Sundance films if you want to this weekend, I think, is my understanding.
Yeah.
But I will say it hasn't been free of frustration. You know, the biggest frustration being that movies, quote-unquote, sell out. You know, like there are tickets that become unavailable. And oftentimes the movies only have like one or two screenings and then... no more screenings, or and like because the buzz was so good from the first screening, the second screening has sold out. And so it's often been the case where it's like, oh, I missed the first screening, and then by the time I'm like, I want to get to the second screening, it's sold out. So that's been a little bit of a bummer.
Yeah. But they had to do a real last minute pivot, I know. They were planning to have a huge portion of it in person, sort of a hybrid in person and virtual film festival. And really just a couple weeks before they sort of made the call to go all virtual. So I'm sure on their end, there has been quite a lot of scrambling to try to figure out the best way to do everything. And it does seem like that kind of situation where there are many, many pluses to this situation and then also some negatives as well.
Yeah. And that's a great caveat that you're mentioning there, which is the fact that the festival has been as smooth as it is a miracle. The fact that any movies have gotten made during COVID is a miracle. Yeah. You know, like I am picking nits off of, you know, a really amazing sort of program that they've put on. So, but yeah, I would say overall, it's been a smooth, seamless experience that I've been happy with. Let's talk a little bit about our overall kind of reaction to the festival, because sometimes in years past, it's possible to like detect themes coming out of a festival. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like, oh, there's like 18 movies at the festival about like climate change, global warming or whatever, you know, like, and it's like, ooh, that's a really big theme. Or there's 18 movies about like incest or whatever this year. Mm-hmm. But like, I don't know if you've been able to detect any kind of overarching themes in this year's festival or anything that kind of strikes you about what's going on at this year's festival. I have seen, as we're recording this, I think seven movies at the festival. How many have you seen, Caroline? And do you have any thoughts on the any themes or any things you're recognizing?
Yes, I just had to very quickly count. I've seen 13 so far with the hopes to watch a few more. One theme, this is a very small little subset of movies, but there are a handful of movies that are about abortion, including the one sort of interesting double feature is this historical drama called Call Jane that's about this group called the Janes, or the Jane Initiative, that sort of at a time when abortion was illegal helped, it was sort of an underground activist group that helped women access safe abortions. And in addition to that Call Jane drama that stars Elizabeth Banks, there's also a documentary about the very same subject called The Janes.
The Janes, yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I have not seen the documentary yet. I did enjoy the sort of drama, but I'm interested to see those as sort of a back-to-back feature on literally the same, you know, topic.
Yeah, and I would say that those very reasonably reflect anxiety about the possibility that Roe v. Wade might get overturned this year, which is extremely upsetting to think about. But, you know, there are movies that kind of are very concerned with that topic.
Mm-hmm.
I think there is a documentary about the New Deal, if I'm not mistaken, as well as one about one by Abigail Disney, if I recall correctly, about like how a mega corporation like Disney treats its workers. So there is like class consciousness and sort of some awareness of some of the bleak circumstances that we live in right now that are reflected in the festival as well. Anything else that you can kind of detect as any kind of theme coming out of this thing?
You know, I mean, I think overall, I don't know if there are things that hugely strike me as like a huge overall theme, but two that I've watched recently, they're both sort of in the horror genre, although maybe not necessarily the most conventional takes on horror, but there's a movie called Fresh with Sebastian Stan and Daisy Edgar-Jones, and another Danish movie called Speak No Evil, that are both sort of movies about trusting people you maybe shouldn't trust, just sort of being charmed by people, and then out of politeness sort of agreeing to things that snowball in these sort of, you know, exaggerated horrific ways, but that's maybe tapping into something about people's desire to be polite or to see the best in other people when that isn't necessarily the safest choice.
Yeah, and just sort of horror coming out of social circumstance, like regular relatable social circumstances, but I don't know that I would describe that as like a unique theme of this year's festival or anything like that. But I watched a movie called Piggy that I'm going to talk about shortly that very much deals with a somewhat similar topic. So yeah, I would say overall there are sort of some themes, the Jane and the Call Jane and the Janes, that's a kind of a notable inclusion. But I don't know. The other thing I would say is I feel like sometimes there is like attempts to combine two ideas or issues together in ways that may not be fully successful. I don't know if that you would describe this as a theme at all, but an example of that would be a movie that I'll mention later called God's Country, which is a movie starring Tandy Newton that is basically like a thriller, a slow burn thriller that's kind of a almost neo-Western that takes place in kind of the wintry forest in an isolated house or near an isolated house. And also is about diversity inclusion at liberal arts colleges. You know, like it just is like, ooh, that's kind of an unwieldy combination in my opinion. And I don't know. Have you noticed any other movies like that might be like combining a couple of ideas in a rather unwieldy fashion?
I think I've watched a couple things that are very tonally ambitious or sort of combining multiple tones, including one I'll talk about more in depth, but one just to mention quickly is this movie called Emergency, which is starts out as like a college comedy, like we're going to do this crazy wild party, kind of like a super bad Booksmart thing. But it's about these two guys that are best friends. They're Black and they have a third roommate who is Latino, and they come home to their, you know, college apartment, and there is this white girl passed out drunk on their floor. And they then have to figure out how they can help her without, you know, necessarily involving police in a way that might threaten them. And so it is on the one hand, this like really broad, like raucous comedy. And on the other hand, kind of like a really intense, like social drama thriller, which I think are pretty ambitious tones to try to combine. And I feel like I've seen a couple things like that, that are taking big swings with like mixing genres and mixing tones.
Yeah, I think that's a much better way to put it than I put it, which is like, yeah, I would agree. Several of the films I'm going to mention like mix tones, sometimes in a way that's not fully successful. Mm-hmm. So here are the ground rules of how we're going to proceed for this episode. Both Caroline and I have chosen three films that we want to highlight from the festival. These are films that we think are interesting or that are good or that are likely to cause conversation throughout the course of 2022. And so we're going to start with that. And then we're going to just run down all the other movies we saw in rather quick succession. I will list every single movie we mention in the show notes for this episode. So don't worry about jotting everything down. Like, it's all in the show notes. Just look at the episode show notes if you want to refer to what we're talking about. So all that said, we've each chosen three films. Caroline, what's the first film from Sundance 2022 that you want to highlight today?
Mm-hmm. Well, I decided to do mine from like most intense to least intense. That seemed like a nice sort of shape to take it in. So I'm going to start kind of in the deep end here, which is with a documentary called Tantura, which
And actually, before you get into it, let me just also mention one other thing, which is just for spoiler purposes, I think we are going to disclose the premises of every, like probably most of these films that we mentioned. We will not spoil any of the films because it's very difficult to see any of them right now, or you might not have an easy time seeing them. So we won't spoil any movies, which means like give away the endings of any of these movies, but we will talk about the premises in hopes of potentially enticing you to see the film. So I do want to call out, if you don't want to even know the premises, then you may not want to listen to this episode, but we will disclose the premises. Okay, sorry, Caroline, go ahead.
Yeah, Tantura. No, I think that was a great caveat because it is, I mean, sometimes I think this is a little tangent, but you know, if you're an average person who's just a film goer, how much value is there to you to sort of like know all the nuances of Sundance? But I think it's sort of, as you're saying, like, here's some highlights that you can look out for throughout the rest of the year. And so one that I hope lands on people's radar is this documentary called Tantura, which is essentially looking at sort of reframing the contemporary Israeli-Palestinian conflict by going back to sort of the founding of modern-day Israel in 1948. The Israeli-Arab like war for independence is what the Israelis call it, or the Nakba, which is like basically translate as the catastrophe, is what the Palestinians call it. And it is an Israeli filmmaker named Alon Schwartz, and he is essentially pointing out that the way that Israel describes its own history, that there is sort of a lot of denial of the truth of what happened, including specifically these accusations of war crimes that happened in this Palestinian village of Tantura, that a bunch of Israeli soldiers were sort of told to come in and get the people out of the village. And he has all of these tapes of Israeli soldiers that were the ones that did this, that were charged with getting the people out of Tantura. And there were these people who were interviewed in the 90s, sort of discussing what had happened there, including just the idea that they had just essentially murdered a lot of people, like not in acts of war, but just more in war crimes. And so there was this big case that happened in the 90s where this information was published academically, and then the Israeli government basically shut it down and pulled the information and like denied that this had ever happened. So this is a documentary where the present day filmmaker is like revisiting this case in the 90s, going back to re-interview a lot of the soldiers that were interviewed in the 90s. And it's upsetting. It's upsetting on sort of the interpersonal level of how these soldiers are recounting what happened, sometimes in a way that they're like very remorseful, sometimes in a way where they're in denial, sometimes in a way where they're almost like laughing it off. But I think even more so, the documentary is looking at sort of just the way that the official state of Israel is sort of denying its own history in a way that, like, that's almost the scariest thing about the documentary, is this statewide denial. And I think that the movie, like, it's obviously a very sensitive and provocative subject, which is one of the reasons I think that this documentary might sort of be a big deal if it gets seen more widely. But I think it just does a really good job of pointing out the dangers of having history hidden and the dangers of denying things that happened. And I think in a particular irony of Israel being a state that's sort of participating in that denial, given how much the Holocaust, which was, you know, connected to the founding of modern Israel, is so much about we can't live in denial. We have to, you know, acknowledge that this history happened, and sort of the fact that in many ways Israel is not doing that now. So provocative subject matter, but I think compellingly and like empathetically and smartly told.
Well, the movie is Tantura, and it feels, I mean, you know, really starting us off with a real pick-me-up, Caroline.
I know.
Thank you for that.
It really dove us right in there.
But I think that it's, you know, obviously the history of Israel and the history of the United States are vastly different, but we do live in a country right now that is banning books from many of its libraries. Like, this is literally happening in our country right now because, you know, many complex reasons. Some of which are that people don't want to feel bad about the past. People don't want to look at the past because it's ugly and upsetting. And so it does feel like it's a particularly relevant message that people need to hear right now. Yes?
Yeah, yeah, for sure. And I think just a smart call to just the importance of acknowledging that things happened, like just as a first step in so many situations. And again, you know, you reference things that are happening in America, but the sort of one, this desire to deny that history happened, it's just helpful to know one, and just starting from a place of truth, like at the bare minimum, can be a helpful starting point.
All right. Well, that's Tantura, the documentary that premiered at Sundance this year. I watched a movie called Piggy, by Carlota Pereda. It is her directorial debut, which is an expansion of her 2018 short film of, I think, the same name and concept. Did you hear about this movie, Caroline?
I have heard I've seen a couple of people tweeting about it, but I haven't checked it out. So I'm excited to hear your takes and recommendations.
So it's part of their midnight program. You know, the idea is like when Sundance was running in person, there would be like movies that you could only see at midnight at Sundance, and it'd be mostly horror films. And it's like really difficult to get into Sundance as a horror film, you know, because they only have like four or five slots, basically, you know what I mean? And so this is one of them that got in. It was part of their midnight program. And essentially, it is, how to describe? It is basically a movie that is a slasher film about bullying, if that makes any sense. You know, I was talking earlier about like combining different ideas and tones, but the central character in the movie is Laura Galan, and she is mercilessly bullied by her quote-unquote friends, the people around her, and she's treated extremely poorly, and then something terrible happens, you know, a horrifying crime happens that kind of upsets the balance of power and also like changes the entire dynamic in the small town that she lives in. You know, it's a really deeply upsetting film. And I do think, you know, a solid debut from Carlotta Peretta. I would say that the scenes of like the sequences of the movie that show like the bullying and the sort of social torment are extremely upsetting and compelling. Actually, in my opinion, way more upsetting than any of the other sort of more conventional horror elements of this. Mm-hmm. Adolescence is truly hell, and teens are truly vicious and cruel. And I think that what this movie asks us to do is to consider the parallels between how teenagers treat each other and, you know, what happens when someone actually who means to do you harm, like the level of harm that is, you know, like bodily harm, how those things can often feel the same and be associated with each other and maybe how intense each of them are. I would say, yeah, this is a pretty solid horror film, pretty upsetting horror film. And, you know, this is another thing that I notice, Caroline, at Sundance, is you're often seeing these debut film, like directors making mm-hmm. their first film, right? And as a result, many of them, in my opinion, do strike me as a little bit unpolished. And when I say unpolished, what I mean is they don't feel like they've been sort of test screened or focus tested, if that makes sense, right? Like, it doesn't feel like 300 people watched this movie and like rated it using a dial in front of them and like they cut out all the extraneous parts and like honed this down to like a diamond or anything like that. It feels like here is one person's vision, and it might be a little bit rough around the edges, it might be a little bit shaggy, and that's kind of what a movie like Piggy feels like. And there's many movies at Sundance every year that I think fall into that category.
Mm-hmm.
So overall, I was a fan of this one, and I think, but mostly when I watch a movie like this, I'm like, I can't wait to see what this person does next. You know, this movie might not be a masterpiece, but it's very good. It's a very strong and promising start, and it's like this person probably is headed for great things in the future. So that's Piggy, and it is a horror film at Sundance 2022 this year. So
we
that's
both
my
made
first one.
Nice light picks for our opening.
Oh yeah. No, it's great. It's, you know, I don't know why we actually started with those, because there are, I think, lighter movies in our mixes.
See, my thought was build up to it, like end on the lighter mm-hmm. note rather than end on the dramatic note. But I guess there's an argument for both ways.
Indeed. Okay, so that's my first film. What's your second film that you wanted to mm-hmm. highlight from Sundance?
So
2022?
My second one does lighten things up considerably and also continues on a lot of the themes you were just mentioning, and that it is a film made by a first-time feature director, and it's a movie that I think is also doing a lot of big tonal swings, as we were talking about earlier. The movie is called Honk for Jesus, Save Your Soul. And it's directed by a director named Adama Igbo. She also had made the movie as a short in, I think, 2018. And then this is the sort of feature version of it. It is a good chunk of it is a sort of Christopher Guest style, like Best in Show mockumentary about a mega church in Atlanta, a Southern Baptist mega church that the pastor is played by Sterling K. Brown of This Is Us, and his wife, who the sort of fake documentary is mainly following, is played by the wonderful Regina Hall. And
yeah,
they
she's having a great Sundance this year. She's also in Master, one of the best reviewed films from the festival.
Mm-hmm. And so, just like one of our most underrated, not even just comedic actors, just like underrated actors in general, mm-hmm. I think. And this movie's such a great showcase for her, because a lot of the movie is this big, broad satire about sort of the hypocrisy of the prosperity gospel and people being like, you know, God gave me this jet and this car and these 12 million Prada suits that I have. And it slowly becomes clear that this church that used to have all of these congregants, there has been some sort of scandal involving the pastor, and the church has fallen on hard times. And sort of the premise of this fake documentary is that they are about to reopen on Easter Sunday and have their rebirth. And it's, you know, the movie slowly reveals sort of all the details of everything that's happened and the setup of this world. But one of the really cool things it does is that the movie will kind of switch aspect ratios. Like, it will go from essentially full screen to being like a letterboxed aspect mm-hmm. ratio. And those are the scenes that are without the documentary crew. This is like the real pastor and his wife mm-hmm. sort of behind the scenes.
Mm.
And so some of those scenes almost become just like full on drama scenes. And I think similar to what you're talking about with Piggy, like,
the sort of behind the scenes still take place in the reality of the movie though, right?
Yes, yes. So we're still seeing, yeah. So it's as if we are both seeing, it's like we're the behind the scenes drama up, and then sometimes it will be the camera is filming it in the fake mockumentary right. world.
So you're seeing a mockumentary and also the making of the mockumentary, basically.
Correct, correct, yeah. And so I think what you were similar to what you're talking about with Piggy, where there are a lot of sort of like wild swings that maybe don't always work, but sort of the pure ambition of them is really exciting to watch. That's mm-hmm. very much the case here. There'll be scenes where the screen will be in the mockumentary mode, and then almost like halfway through the scene, when it gets to more dramatic, it will like flip out of that, and all of a sudden the aspect ratio will be different, and we'll be seeing the exact same scene, but like a slightly more realistic version of it. And I think especially towards the end, the movie starts getting at this really interesting, like, tragic comedy tone, like dark comedy, which I think is really cool for a movie that starts so broadly, like really, really almost like an SNL parody level of heightened comedy, to then get to this really dark, twisty, tragic comedy that I won't say too much about, but does involve miming someone in a mime outfit as part of it.
It's, I mean, just like, most mime stories are tragic, so yeah.
It's true. It's true. And this movie leans into that in just such a cool, interesting, like ambitious way that I think is so exciting to watch from a first-time filmmaker.
I feel like there's a lot of anxiety in the pop culture around megachurches right now. Mm-hmm. Last year saw the release of The Eyes of Tammy Faye from Fox Searchlight with Jessica Chastain, and there's also a show on HBO right now called The Righteous Gemstones. I'm curious if you've checked that show out, because I've seen a lot of comparisons between Honk for Jesus, Save Your Soul and Righteous Gemstones, often unfavorably about this movie, you know, compared to Righteous Gemstones.
I have not seen Righteous Gemstones, but I did see Eyes of Tammy Faye, which I was also, I think, higher on than a lot of people. So potentially mm-hmm. I'm just really the target audience for mega church comedies. I think that what is most interesting about Honk for Jesus, Save Your Soul is the shifts in tone that it's going for. I think for some people, the shifts didn't work. Like, it felt like it was two movies inelegantly stitched together in a way. Mm-hmm. But to me, I felt like the shifts were so purposeful. And I think it so helps that Regina Hall and Sterling K. Brown are just like two of the best actors working today. And they're so deft at doing comedy in addition to drama. And I think they can really seamlessly shift between those tones. And so mm-hmm. to me, this is like, yeah, maybe it's a big swing. Maybe it won't quite work for everyone because it's so unusual what it's trying to do. But I think that I kind of like when comedy is taking those big swings like that. I haven't seen Righteous Gemstones. My sense of it is that maybe it's a little more tonally cohesive throughout. So maybe that's just like a difference between that and something like Honk for Jesus.
All right. Well, I'm glad you enjoyed it. It's Honk for Jesus, Save Your Soul. And Caroline, I'm learning more about you every day. Like the fact that you're really into takedowns of megachurches, I guess.
I mean, who knew? I didn't even know this about myself. We're discovering this real time together.
Excellent. It's beautiful. Okay, so that's your second film, Honk for Jesus, Save Your Soul. I want to bring up a movie called After Yang by Koganada. Are you familiar with Koganada's work? Did you see Columbus by any chance?
I did not, but I was, while sort of looking into After Yang, which I also watched, I watched a trailer for Columbus, and I was like, oh, I need to watch this immediately. This looks great.
Yeah, so After Yang is a movie that A24 is distributing. It will be, I think, released, you know, either in theaters or video on demand later this year. And it essentially is about the future, where there are these things called technosapiens. They're robots that look identical to humans, and they essentially serve as servants. And there's different kinds of technosapiens. There's some technosapiens that are useful for like lifting things and moving things, and presumably some that are like erotic technosapiens. And there's some technosapiens that are called cultural technosapiens that just like help you and teach you things. Yang is one such technosapient. And he is brought into this family that has a transracial adoptee. You know, Colin Farrell is married to Jodie Turner Smith. And so it's a white father and a black mother, and they have a Chinese daughter. And they have this technosapient named Yang, whose job it is to teach their daughter what it means to be Chinese, basically, what it means to be Asian. And in the opening scene of the movie, Yang breaks down, like he's not functioning anymore. And the rest of the movie is largely occupied with Colin Farrell trying to figure out how to resolve that situation and learning more about Yang in the process. I think this movie is beautiful and meditative, and it's a super ambitious movie, which is true of many of the movies we're going to talk about, I think, you know. Perhaps too ambitious. Perhaps its reach exceeds its grasp, because it has so much to say about what it means to be human, what it means to be, and if you kind of extend out the technosapient metaphor, right? What it means to be human, but also what it means to be Asian, what it means to be an immigrant, what it means to be part of a family that you don't really feel like you fully belong in. What it means to like be a machine that has like a, where everyone knows how you were created and people know that you will eventually, you have the capability or possibility of being just decommissioned if you start malfunctioning. You're like, all these questions are brought to bear, but also in a package, this movie that's very kind of just beautiful and impressionistic in terms of its sort of editing style and the way in which it's shot and where the way in which the world has been built. Caroline, you saw After Yang as well. Curious what you thought of it.
I did, yeah. I'm so glad that you picked it as one to highlight, because I think for me, I so appreciated this movie, maybe not quite enough to have it crack my like very top tier of stuff I saw, but I do think it's such a cool, thoughtful, human movie. And I think that so the way that the sort of the technosapiens in this world work, it's like not dissimilar from the Westworld type of robot people. Mm-hmm. Yeah. But one thing that I never really connect with on Westworld, it's like a very cynical view of how, if you know, if androids were around, how we would use them, how they would respond to us. And right.
In Westworld, it's basically like we would fuck them and kill them. That's kind
And then they would also want to kill us. And yes. Like, it's not a happy bond there. But I'm a person who's raised on Star Trek The Next Generation. So my main like reference point for androids is Data, who was just like a nice android friend who kind of wanted to be human, but appreciated what he was. And I think Yang, the character of Yang, is in many ways very similar to Data, and that he is sort of striving to be human, but also appreciates what he is and that the people around him, sometimes it's like they treat him like, oh, my iPhone broke. And sometimes they treat him like my son is ill. And it's like interesting to watch them process like, you know, which side do they slot him into? And yeah, I think this is such a cool, like, it's like a, I guess not happier, but it's like a sweeter Ex Machina almost. Like it has those like near future vibes, but in a vein of like sweet family melodrama, not like icy, you know, danger or thriller.
An Ex Machina that doesn't have psychological torture.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. But yeah, I do think though that the movie, like I said, does feel a little bit too ambitious, a little bit too messy. It kind of brings up a lot of ideas. Particularly towards the second half, I think you probably can guess what I'm talking about. Like a whole new sci-fi concept is brought into the movie that I just don't know that really goes anywhere satisfying. And so there's all these kinds of elements to the movie that I feel like it brings up interesting ideas and doesn't fully pay them off. And I think that's okay. Because at the end of the day, the movie is still really beautiful and very moving. And just from a pure like craft level, the way the movie's put together, like, the movie does something really interesting where at one point they're able to access Yang's memories somehow, that in a way that I won't like fully explain. But when they replay them, the way they're played back is just, I don't even want to spoil it. I'll just say it's just, I haven't seen memories depicted in the way that they are in this film before. And so I just think there's a lot of really interesting craft there from a filmmaking perspective that makes this movie worth checking out. Many people have already said it's going to be one of their favorites of the year. I don't know if it's going to rise to that level for me, but it's up there. It's definitely one of the best movies I've seen so far in 2022. I can put that up there. You know, but
it definitely feels worth seeing, even if like me, I don't know if I quite connected to it emotionally as much as I wanted to, but I am so glad that I watched it. Like, it's hard for me to imagine someone watching this and just being like, I got nothing out of that. Even if, like you're saying, maybe they don't feel like everything works. Like, it just the ideas it's putting out there are so cool.
Yeah. Yeah. The world building, you know, the aesthetic of this feature that has been built. And I'll just say that, you know, a huge part of this Yang character is the Yang character has a job, which is like he's supposed to tell this girl what it means to be Asian, right? But he himself doesn't really fully understand because he's a robot. And that is a tension that comes through in the movie. And, you know, I don't know, like, how much Kogonada intended this to be a commentary on, like, what it means to be Asian American. But as an Asian American, it's often a very discombobulating experience because people look at you and they instantly recognize you as Asian. But, like, you know, I spent 99% of my life in America, you know? And so there is this kind of disconnect there that I think the movie really highlights by making the main Asian character a robot.
Mm-hmm.
So I found that stuff to be very, very powerful and thought provoking. So,
yeah, he's played by the character of Yang is played by Justin H. Min, who was sort of underused on the Umbrella Academy, mm-hmm. and I think is lovely in this movie. And so I'm really, like, happy to see him getting more high profile roles like this.
Yeah, he's great. He's great. So that's After Yang. It is going to be released by A24 later this year. And it's another movie that I wanted to highlight from this year's Sundance. Caroline?
Now we're into my pure, just happy joy pick.
Yes.
We've left the harsh reality behind for a warmer reality of this movie called Cha-Cha Real Smooth. Maybe not the best title in the world, we can debate. But it is the second feature of this, like, I think he's like 25-year-old filmmaker called Cooper Rafe, who directs this. He wrote it and he stars in it as it's sort of like a graduate style story, right? Like this, when I read the premise for this movie, I was like, this sounds so annoying. I don't want to watch it. Like, I feel right. like I've seen this
same.
Before.
Same, which is why, like, I haven't seen it. You know,
I mean, enough. Like, it's a guy. He's like just graduated from college. He moves back home. He doesn't know what to do. He meets this woman in her 30s. It's like a single mom and is sort of like strikes up a flirtatious relationship with her. And I was like, oh, this just sounds so like annoying. I don't want to watch it. Mm-hmm. And then I saw a lot of people tweeting positively about it. And because I have the privilege of having press access where I'm not limited in the same way, I threw it on and like absolutely fell in love. This is just like from the opening scene, I was like, oh, this is not at all what I expected. Because even though it's those very, very familiar, like graduate style beats, this is what I call a kind movie, which is a movie where just every character is nice, which you think would be boring. But when it's done well, I find it to be so compelling. Because instead of it being like, oh, this person's secretly a jerk, or like, oh, her, you know, boyfriend, we have to steal her away from the boyfriend because the boyfriend's a jerk. It's just like this realistic look at everyone is a good person and they want good things, but those good things don't always align. So the tension comes from that, or they're limited in their perspective. Like a lot of this movie is about the main character, Andrew, who's played by Cooper. It's just him, you know, being 22. And so his view of the world is not as fully formed as someone that's in their 30s. And so you have this really empathetic character who's in their 30s, who's like so appreciative of him. And they have this, it's played by Dakota Johnson, is the woman that he sort of has this flirtatious relationship with. And they really do, like, you can tell that they just have like amazing chemistry and they make so much sense together in some ways, but in other ways, the age gap and just like the nature of her life, like there's elements about them that don't make sense. And the movie's just like exploring that tension, but in a way where you just empathize with everyone. And it's so funny and it's so sweet. And I just like truly love this movie so much. I can't say enough good things about it.
Well, you've sold me. The movie is Cha-Cha Real Smooth. The writer director is Connor Rafe, right?
Yeah, Cooper, I believe.
Oh, Cooper Rafe, I should say. I apologize. This guy is apparently a wunderkind.
I know.
But also has had some rough luck because his first movie, Shithouse, was supposed to debut at South by Southwest in 2020, a festival that was canceled. And then he got Cha-Cha Real Smooth into Sundance, which was also kind of canceled, you know. But so he's had a rough go of it in terms of festivals, but my guess is this guy's going to break out real big in the near future.
Yeah, I would not be surprised if Cha-Cha Real Smooth emerges as one of those. You know, maybe it's not like an Oscar baity type of movie, but I could certainly see this being picked up and like just playing really well as a really sweet sort of like indie sort of rom-com, sort of dramedy, sort of coming of age story.
Maybe it's going to be like The Brothers McMullen, right? which is like Ed Burns movie that broke out at Sundance real big or something like that, you know? But yeah, it seems like this guy, you know, once might have been luck, but, you know, South by Southwest and Sundance, like, I have a feeling this guy has some skills. So I'm looking forward to checking out Cha-Cha Real Smooth. I wanted to mention Duel as my final film, Riley Stern's newest film. And I really don't want to talk that much about it because I feel like there's a lot of surprises to be found within the film. But I think I can say that what I will say is that the movie, the title is a pun. And it has to do with both two things of a type and also duels like in which people kill each other. And I think that, you know, I said this on the film cast, but I think Riley Stearns is fast becoming the American Yorgos Lanthimos. And I say that in the most complimentary way possible. His movies are so off kilter, so discomforting, and so creative. And they also have characters that speak in like very flat affect for, you know, dramatic effect. But I loved what this movie is trying to do. It grabs you from the opening scene. It does not let go. I was a huge fan of Duel. And I think, you know, this movie has already been picked up for distribution. So you will have a chance to see it, I think, in theaters and very likely, almost definitely VOD later this year. Caroline, I'm curious what you thought of Riley Stearns' Duel.
Yeah, I'm not, again, I'm glad you picked this one. Like, I think it's a fun one to talk about. I was not quite as high as you are, I think. I liked this more than Riley Stearns' last film, The Art of Self-Defense, which really didn't work for me at all. So I think this was like a good example of a movie where his style, that flat affectation you're talking about, did work better for me.
I think in the end,
sort of like the ambitious things it was going for, it's kind of similar to what you said about After Gang, actually. They didn't all weave together enough for me. And in this case, I found the not weaving together to be frustrating enough to sort of tinge the other stuff a little bit more for me. But I do love Karen Gillan, who is one of the stars of this movie, along with Aaron Paul. And I think they are both really great performers for the like Riley Stearns world. So it was really fun watching them sort of play these very flat, dry characters.
And even in that construct, I feel like they have great chemistry together. You know what I mean? So it's a joy to see them in this movie together, and what they're doing in this movie, I think, is actually really hilarious. I'm at the same time when I watch Riley Stearns' movie or a Riley Stearns movie like this one, I am laughing and also extremely disturbed by what I'm seeing. That's usually what's happening. And I love that he knows how to walk that line. So that's Duel. And it's, I've seen seven films. It's my favorite film so far. All right, Caroline, those are the top three movies we each wanted to highlight, but we saw a bunch more, and I don't exactly know how to do this. Like, should we take turns or should we just run them down? Why don't we try taking turns? Why don't you just list the movie and then kind of say like quick thoughts on it, and then I'll go after that.
Sure. Well, I'll start. This is thematically appropriate. So Jesse Eisenberg directed a movie that is called When You Finish Saving the World, which, funnily enough, it also had a sort of a dry affectation to it. It was the first movie I watched at Sundance. I was like, oh, what an interesting tone for Jesse Eisenberg to play around with. And then as soon as I watched Duel, it made me remember that he was in The Art of Self-Defense. And I feel like When You Finish Saving the World is sort of going for a similar Riley Stearns dryness, not quite as much. It's about, it's present day, no like sci-fi element, but it's like a mother son who are both sort of self-involved people and is sort of just like an indie dramedy about their lives. But I think the most interesting thing about it is that flat affectation. So I like that Riley Stearns is just sort of like, in maybe that's another like theme of Sundance, is the flat affectation getting out there via Jesse Eisenberg.
But what were your overall thoughts on this one?
I had a fine time when I was watching it. I think it has faded a little bit in memory for me. It's one of those things that feels like not quite a full film in a way. But again, not a bad time watching it.
That's when you finish Saving the World. I watched God's Country. Do you see this movie?
No.
So Tandy Newton plays an ex-cop who is also a professor in this movie. And one day some white men show up at her doorstep with, or not on her doorstep, on her property with guns, looking to go hunting, and sort of conflict results from that. This is a tough one because Tandy Newton's awesome, and I think she just really has not found a project befitting her skills yet. Even the closest thing is Westworld, right? But Westworld has a lot of problems with it. And I know, as somebody who's hosted a podcast about Westworld, that's probably the thing that she is best in and is like most demonstrative of her abilities and her range. But this movie, she's great in it as usual. But I think it was, I saw online, a critic described this as a thriller without the thrills. It is a thriller that is so slow burn that it becomes kind of boring. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Where not that much happens and, it ends up not really amounting to much. It is the debut film of, a filmmaker, named Julian Higgins. I apologize. You know, the movie looks great, and Tanya Newton is great in it, and I just wish that the movie had a little bit more propulsive energy for something that is ostensibly a thriller. So that's mm-hmm. God's Country. Unfortunately, wasn't a huge fan. Caroline, hit us with one other movie.
Well, this is good. I'm really finding some thematic connections here, because the next thing I watched was this movie called 892, mm-hmm. which is a thriller starring John Boyega as a veteran who holds up a bank. It's based on a real life story. I actually think this has the opposite problem of what you were just describing, where to me it was almost too much of a thriller for a movie that is telling a real life story that's touching on so many complicated social issues. It leaned a little more towards the like Netflix thriller genre for me. I do think it's a really fantastic Boyega performance, so I think it's worth watching for that alone, but I don't think the movie kind of worked as well as I wanted to. It's also the final on-screen performance of Michael K. Williams, so that's just another, you know, thing to look out for. I imagine this one will get released. I would not be surprised if it got picked up and released this year. So mixed, but, you know, maybe worth watching for a few performances.
That's 892. I watched a movie called Watcher. This movie is pretty solid horror thriller. It's Micah Monroe starring in another indie horror film where she is followed by sketchy ass people. That's kind of the premise of this movie. I found the movie to be overall pretty effective. Micah Monroe is awesome. I kind of feel like the movie industry has failed Micah Monroe. I don't know if you ever feel that way, but like, she's just an enormously talented actress that. I think people know who Micah Monroe is, but I don't feel like she's really gotten that many roles that are quite worthy of her abilities yet. And she is really, really good in this. I would say this movie, Watcher, is a solid horror thriller, but it's not a movie that, again, it's one of those movies where I feel like, ooh, this is really shows a lot of promise for the filmmaker, Chloe Okuno, who also directed a segment from VHS 94. I think Chloe Okuno is super talented and she's going places. And Watcher, decent horror thriller, Micah Monroe, Chloe Okuno, these are names to watch in the future. Mm-hmm. Caroline, another movie?
Yeah, well, there's some we mentioned at the top, so I'll just remind real quickly, called Jane, which is the Elizabeth Banks historical drama about the Jane Initiative. I think like a pretty... like a movie you could say is like a mom movie or a dad movie, right? Like not the most challenging or mm-hmm. formally inventive take on this material, but I really like enjoyed it. I think I liked it more than a lot of people did. I think it's interesting to take a story of abortion and present it in sort of like a light comedic way, but like I think thoughtfully done. And I thought there was like an interesting choice in sort of the tone that it went with. It was not like we're making a harrowing drama. It was like, yeah, this is like a movie about solidarity and there can be lightness to
like
it.
Inspirational this is... or something, mm-hmm. you know, rather than like, this is a, you know, yeah. I got
it. It was sort of like, this is a part of life. And mm-hmm. I liked that. That for me was working. One that I'll just real quick mention, there was a documentary about TikTok that was called TikTok Boom that I think would be a perfectly fine primer if you like have no frame of reference for TikTok, like a great movie to show, I don't know, so a boomer that doesn't know anything about this. But I think if you are in any way sort of like into the internet, into social media, you're probably going to be beyond, a little bit beyond where this documentary is.
Got it. Got it. So that's Call Jane and TikTok Boom. I'll mention I watched a movie called My Old School. Did you hear about this movie?
It's on my list of things that I want to see, although we'll see what you thought of it.
I mean, I'm going to say, I don't know about this one, Caroline. So this movie covers the story of a guy named Brandon Lee, and it's pretty clear from just the opening scenes that Brandon Lee did something weird or bad. Like, it's very obvious, and then the movie kind of unfolds what that is. The most interesting part of this movie is the fact that, for not a particularly good reason, by the way, Brandon Lee did not want to appear on camera for the film. But he was willing to be audio recorded. So what they did was they recorded Brandon Lee's audio talking about his experiences, and then they got Alan Cumming to lip sync a performance to that audio.
Wow, I had no idea this was a component of this movie.
Which I was like, I've never seen anything like this before, where Alan Cumming had to like study this audio for a really long time and like lip sync like all the mannerisms and the, you know, everything this guy said in these sort of offhanded comments on this interview. And so I just thought that was a really creative way of presenting a person's story who, again, rather inexplicably doesn't want to be shown on camera. I will say it is not difficult to find images of him. So it just kind of feels like a weird limitation that the movie has.
Is the movie presented as like a documentary, or yes, is the rest of it? Okay.
It's presented like a documentary, and actually the problem with this movie is I think that the thing that Brandon Lee did is in fact very interesting, but I think that the movie they made around it is not as interesting as the thing. And there's a couple of reasons for this. Number one, they take entirely too long to get to the thing that he did. Like, I think it takes an hour before they actually explain what it is that he actually did. That's just a long time for the movie to string you along, in my opinion. And then they also basically got a lot of Brandon Lee's like school classmates to give interviews talking about their experiences with Brandon Lee. And it's just not very interesting. It's like hearing people talk about, you know, like imagine if we rounded up like 30 of Caroline Sita's like high school classmates to talk about like Caroline Sita, you know?
Mm-hmm.
I'm not saying you weren't an interesting high schooler, but it's just
but
like,
there would be a limitation on
it's just like, I don't
the stories that could be
hear,
told.
Like,
yeah.
It's not like these people have like anything that interesting to say about this. They're just giving color, and it's just way, way too much color, in my opinion.
Wow. You're so right about the Sundance experience of just not knowing what anything of what a movie is. Like, I put that on my list, like, oh, Alan Cumming, I like him, I'll watch what I assumed was like a drama about something British, and now I'm learning in fact is an entirely different thing.
Yeah, I can't recommend this movie, unfortunately. I think because of its over reliance on these talking heads that just like aren't that great, it's just way too long for, you know, this is a movie that should have been like 20 minutes. And instead, it's like an hour and 45. So the story is kind of interesting, but like honestly, the movie kind of soured me on the whole thing. Like, I'm not a fan of Brandon Lee or his story after this. So
wow, and in a way, you've only made me want to see it more now.
Okay, I want to hear what you think of it. But that's
something about the talking around what's it about. That's really sucking me in.
I try. Okay, well, that's My Old School. It's another thing I've been watching. Caroline, hit us with one or two more things you've been watching.
Mm-hmm, yeah, so I'll do another grouping of the two horror movies I mentioned before, which are Speak No Evil, which is about a Danish family who meets a Dutch family while on vacation in Italy. Later, the Dutch family invites the Danish family to come stay with them. They're like, this is kind of weird, but what's the worst that could happen? And it turns out a lot of bad things can happen. But it's a movie that is, most of it is just like a weird social drama about like, what will you do for the sake of being polite? It's mm-hmm. a lot of the sort of more ominous couple. You can't tell if they're testing the other couple or what's happening, but like they sort of know one woman's vegetarian, but they're like, oh, here, try this like, you know, steak that I cooked. And they're just sort of pressuring her to do it. And she doesn't want to be rude and reject. And it's sort of like interrogating what you'll do for politeness. Like yeah. to me, a real like 3-star horror movie where it was interesting to watch. I'm probably not going to think about it a ton again. Not a highlight, not a low light either.
Which I've heard so many mixed things. You know, Devendra said it was extremely upsetting, and I'm like, well, that's definitely in Dave Chen's camp, you know. Mm-hmm. But then I had a patron of mine and a listener say that she thought it was very dumb. So I don't know who to believe. But
it's one of those movies where you have to buy into the protagonist sometimes doing things that are illogical. Mm-hmm. And sometimes that's really interesting, and you're like, oh, this is intentionally interrogating, like, them being forced to be polite. And other times it just feels like, okay, this has crossed beyond how these people, I believe these people would believably right. act. So I think it's one of those things where like, how much do you want to suspend disbelief to sort of go along with the horror movie aspects of it?
Well, that's Speak No Evil. And mm-hmm. I think you had another one you want to highlight?
Yeah, the other one is Fresh, which like I said, is the Sebastian Stan, Daisy, what's her name? Edgar Jones movie. I won't say too much. It basically starts like a rom-com. And then is definitely not a rom-com, but it sustains that rom-com tone for quite a long time before taking a decisive swerve. So if you are a fan of, I don't want to say, like, I want to say Promising Young Woman, but not necessarily that it's dealing with those same themes, but mm-hmm. sort of in the mix of this, like, you know, bright rom-com-y thing with like very, very dark stuff and sort of an interrogation of like dating culture and masculinity, and a movie that I don't think was necessarily trying for the same, you know, thematic depth as Promising Young Woman, but sort of a like lightly feminist, gory horror movie good time with a really, really fun Sebastian Stan performance.
All right. That's the movie's Fresh, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And I'll just mention I accidentally bought a ticket for Phoenix Rising when I was trying mm-hmm. to buy a ticket for my old school. Like, I literally wow. pressed the wrong button. And so I'm just going to admit that I didn't really want to watch Phoenix Rising. Not that I was opposed to the movie or anything. It's just like not what I was particularly wanting to watch at that point in time. But it's basically a movie about Evan Rachel Wood detailing what happened to her when she dated and was together with Marilyn Manson, and kind of the horrifying ways in which he was terrible and abusive to her. I'm going to say that I think it's very valuable for survivors to get their stories out there. And, you know, in that sense, a movie like this justifies its existence just for that alone. But I'll also say that I wish that this wasn't the system that survivors needed to use to get their stories out there, which is mm-hmm. like to make a movie about like a high profile person. You know, first of all, I mean, you know, many people aren't high profile enough to get movies made about them. Right. Either if you are the abuser or the person being abused. Right. And so like this as a way of getting survivor stories out there, it doesn't solve that problem, but it's also just weird to go to a film festival and pay money to see someone talk about their abuse. You know, like it just is like a weird, like, you know, this is ostensibly like an entertainment format. And I feel like how should I even be thinking about this? You know, like, is it supposed to be entertainment? Should I evaluate it as such? Obviously not, you know, like, but it's just weird when sort of, survivor stories are intertwined with commerce in some way. And mm-hmm. that's been true of many survivor stories, you know, like often it's inextricable from commerce because, like, you know, it costs money to make these things, you know, the people who are printing the stories or selling copies of newspaper, you know, like, it's just, I basically am just saying, like, again, I think it's very valuable for survivor stories to get out there. I just wish there was a system that wasn't quite as intertwined with commerce, if mm-hmm. that makes sense.
Yeah, it does.
Yeah. But if you want to sort of learn about Evan Rachel Wood's story, I think Phoenix Rising is a decent way to do that. So that's another movie I saw. I think you have one more, Caroline, right?
Yeah, I mentioned earlier, I talked about it already, but Emergency is the college comedy about the two black men who find a white girl passed out in their house. Really cool, interesting tonal stuff, and would definitely recommend checking that out. Like, I think it's doing interesting things within a sort of conventional genre, but switching the genre to say like, okay, what does it look like if different people are the leads in this genre?
Mm.
So I hope that one, I have a couple qualms with maybe how it's like viewing the female perspective of it all, but for the most part, I think really cool and ambitious. But I'll end here on the movie that almost cracked my sort of top three choices, which is this movie called Living, in which Bill Nighy plays a sort of like post-war British civil servant who lives this very boring bureaucratic life and then finds out that he has a terminal illness. And sort of the movie is just following what he chooses to do with the last couple like months of his life. It's a sort of reimagining of the Kurosawa famous movie, Akira. Mm. And this movie just like absolutely wrecked me. I thought it was gorgeous, just like sad and poignant and life affirming and a gorgeous Bill Nighy performance and sort of that, you know, reserved British quality to it. And I believe that this one has also been picked up and will be available later in the year. And it's the sort of movie that just sort of seems like a quiet, conventional period piece, and in some ways is, but I think in other ways is just like beautifully done and just like a celebration of, or a reminder really of like, you know, your time is limited, like do what you can with it. So emotional in the best way. That's Living, and I really recommend it.
That's Living, and you really recommend it in many mm-hmm. senses of the word. Well, I think that's going to bring us to the end. You can find a list of every single film that we mentioned in this conversation over on the show notes. Caroline, this has been such a pleasure. Thanks so much for joining me for this.
Yeah, this was great. And I have a couple more days to check things out. So this was helpful for me to like put Piggy on the list to check out a couple other things. So this was great.
Yeah, same. And I should also mention there's a bunch of movies that we haven't mentioned as well, you know, that I actually really want to see. The biggest one being Master, I would say, mm-hmm. is a movie that I really want to check out. Aubrey Plaza has a Sundance movie as well called Emily the Criminal. That didn't have any tickets available. I really want to check that out as well. And a handful of other ones. So, you know, there's many movies to check out. Like even among the, you know, 12 or 13 or whatever unique films that we've seen, there's still many more that we haven't seen yet. So we may or may not record a follow-up, but either way, I'll probably be tweeting about it. I'll probably be letterboxing about it. You can find Caroline's work, of course, at AV Club as well as Fox Digital. And also be sure to follow her on Twitter. That's at twitter.com/CarolineCita. You want to let people know how to spell that, Caroline?
Yeah. So it's CaroLine. Last name is SIEDE.
I want to thank all the patrons who make episodes of the podcast like this one possible, specifically all my executive producer patrons. And I'm going to name them right now. Ian, Stephen Miller, Sid Yadav, Steve Austin, Dan Flanagan, Jeff Evans, Mark Warner, and Kevin Sow, who just signed up to be an executive producer patron today. Thank you all so much. Thanks to everyone else over at patreon.com/DaveChen for your support. You're the reason why I can make the things that I make online. I also want to say you can find more episodes of this podcast at culturallyrelevantshow.com. Email me at culturallyrelevantshow@gmail.com. And this episode is powered by Simplecast. Check out simplecast.com for a great way to power and manage your podcast. Until next time, we'll see you later on Culturally Relevant.